there, folks, and welcome to Christ in Every Word, a podcast of the Concordia Bible Institute, housed on the beautiful campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin. This is your opportunity to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest the sacred scriptures with Dr. John Seleska, Director Emeritus of the Concordia Bible Institute, and me, Dr. Brian Gurman, Assistant Professor of Theology here at the University and the Director of the Bible Institute. Dr. Seleska has had a long career as a parish pastor, college, and seminary professor, and he's known for highlighting how central Christ is throughout the entire Bible, both Old and New Testaments, as our tagline puts it. So it's an honor to sit with him here in the podcast room and learn a little bit more from him about the book of 2 Samuel, and I believe we're still on chapter 15.
15. We were about at verse 24, but leading up to it, just to refresh the memory of our listeners, David, of course, is now about, hopefully, from Absalom's point of view, to be dethroned, and Absalom is the man to do it. And so after David had, in his grace and mercy, accepted him back into the kingdom, and in the good graces of the king himself, they had embraced, immediately Absalom begins his quest for the kingdom. He, in verse 6, I think it says something like, he won the hearts of the people by standing at the gate and giving advice or counsel, which was favorable to those people who brought suits and wanted some measure of justice done for them by, quotes, the court there, which normally met at the gate. That was kind of the place of justice in the Old Testament. And then he did this, I think, such an underhanded thing that you could hardly believe. He made it seem as if he were a very pious, God-fearing young man by telling David that he had made a vow that if he were received back to the kingdom and to Jerusalem, that he would serve the Lord, and he had made that vow, and that he had vowed to go to Hebron and do this. And, of course, David gave him permission immediately, said to him, go in peace. And immediately then, Absalom sent out spies, and when they heard the trumpet, they were to yell, Absalom rules in Hebron. And Absalom would take over the kingdom at that point. And of course, he began then to gather to himself 200 men who followed him. And, of course, Ahithophel, the trusted counselor, and we had talked a little bit about how that trust was conveyed to the entire, I guess, to the entire nation of Israel. They thought of his counsel as the counsel of God himself, as the oracle of God. That highly he was revered. He joined the conspiracy. And when it was told David, that's about verse 12, and when it was told David, David, of course, realized this thing has gotten out of hand and began to retreat from Jerusalem with his servants and the others that followed him. And then in verse 16 is that passage which is kind of important because it will play a role in the following history, but he left 10 concubines to take care of the palace, the house of David. And this would, as I say, play a part later in the circumstances as they develop. Then he continued his retreat, and a number of people joined him. The Cherethites and the Pelethites, I think a strong armed guard, together with, now, Ittai the Gittite from Gath, a Philistine. So it seems at least as if some of David's most trusted warriors, strong people, were Philistines. At least here is one who was and who was very faithful to him. And David, of course, suggested to him that you haven't joined us until recently. You certainly don't owe me anything. You may retreat and return and perhaps even join Absalom, but Ittai would not have anything to do with that. He said, I'll even die with you. And so that really does then bring us to that verse 24 and this retreat across the brook Kidron. And, of course, we drew attention to, in fact, that John 18, 1 verse in the New Testament where Jesus did the same thing, the parallel between now David and Christ in the New Testament. And so now David continues to retreat from Jerusalem. And in a certain sense, I think it could be said that Absalom gains such almost complete power and control that you would think it would probably be the end of David's rule. But the Lord had other things in mind. Nevertheless, David is now in retreat. And Absalom coming after him. But there are these people, Zadok at this point, the high priest, and Abiathar, the priest. These two men came with the Ark of the Covenant. That's verse 13 and following there. They came with the Ark of the Covenant together with their two sons, Zadok's son Ahimaaz, I guess, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. Those two sons will play a part too, as David eventually will gain control again. But nevertheless, he's retreating now, and they come, and David says, go back, and whatever information you come across, you can send to me by way of those two sons. You can be very helpful to me, more helpful to me than bringing the ark along. Take the ark back. And if it's the Lord's pleasure, interesting, he says, if it's the Lord's pleasure, then I'll see the ark again, and I will be restored also. So he still had trust that the Lord perhaps would do this for him. This continues then, of course, until I think it's verse, I'm going to guess, 31. Read verse 31, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. And it was told David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness.
Into foolishness, right. And at the same time, now then... Also, here, Hushai the Archite, I think that's in verse 32. Hushai the Archite also comes to David, and he wants to join the retreat. But David says to him, you'll be more of a hindrance. Go back, and you can give advice that would be contrary to Ahithophel's advice, and it would be then that way in which Ahithophel's advice would be turned to foolishness. Well, of course, Hushai agrees and returns. And so we have this going on. And, of course, the conversation then is that Zadok and Abiathar the priests and their sons would somehow consult in the city of Jerusalem with what's going on in the camp of Absalom and bring all of the information to David. And that takes us really to the end of chapter 15. And so those are the circumstances which obtain now and into chapter 16, which is a very interesting chapter. David goes over the hill. I take that to be the Mount of Olives.
Probably so, yeah.
It doesn't say, does it say it in yours?
No, pass between a little beyond the summit. So.
Yeah. But I take it to be the Mount of Olives again, and there's that kind of parallel as he retreats. We should mention now this whole thing with advice and counsel, which is going to happen with these two counselors, Ahithophel and Hushai. But here is a traitor. David's trusted counselor is now a traitor. Now, if you want to take the parallel into the New Testament, we've got Judas, haven't we? And we are going to see a parallel at the end also with this Ahithophel and Judas when it doesn't work out their way. We'll come to that when we get to chapter 17. But right. Maybe we could turn to it now just to kind of show this parallel, a very important parallel, that this traitor, Judas in the New Testament, who conspires against our Lord, now we have Ahithophel, the trusted counselor. This is my own dear friend. Who lifted up his heel against me, Jesus talking about Judas. But read that, verse 17 then. This is what happened when Ahithophel's counsel was not taken.
This is verse 17.
17, verse 23.
23, okay. When Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his donkey and went off home to his own city. He set his house in order and hanged himself, and he died and was buried in the tomb of his father.
But it's interesting. Both these conspirators, when it doesn't work out their way, I'm sure Judas must have thought, Somehow or another, he's got such power. He'll rescue himself. They won't be able to take him. He disappeared from them out of their midst on one occasion, just walked away. And so he'll find some way. And when it wasn't working out and didn't work out as Judas planned, he saw no other hope but to take his own life. That's all the hope he had. Now then, at the end of the chapter, we'll find something about this Ahithophel. Chapter 16, we read it last time, but maybe we could read it here, so we'll see one of the reasons why it happened as it did with him when he took his own life. Just that last verse again, where the council, verse 6, last of chapter 16.
Of 16, yeah. Now, in those days, the counsel of Ahithophel gave was as if one consulted the word of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel esteemed, both by David and by Absalom.
Everybody, I know, sure, everybody in the kingdom. This is who he was. This identified him. Now, when his counsel was not taken, what hope did he have? Right. He would be a nobody. He went from everybody to nobody, from being God to being nobody. What's the only way out? It seemed to him. Now, there was obviously another way out, but he seemingly didn't know that way out or didn't consider that there might have been another way out. But nevertheless, for both of these, Judas and for Ahithophel, the only end was to take their own lives. There was no redemption as far as they were concerned. So anyway, this takes us then to chapter 16, and Ziba now appears after this ascent to Mount Olives. Ziba appears in chapter 16, and he appears with 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins, and it says summer fruit, 100 pieces of summer fruit in the King James. I don't know what the newer translations would call that.
Summer fruits, it just says.
Summer fruits. Yeah. And of course, a flagon of wine, a flask of wine. What would you say? A wineskin, probably. In the King James, it says bottle, but, you know, as we see bottle, it would not have been enough to assuage anybody's thirst. But for specific purposes, of course, David asks, what's this all about? And of course, then he explains that the donkeys, it came on two donkeys, and the donkeys are for the king and his family. So it's interesting how this man is working his way, worming his way into David's heart for a purpose. And of course, the food is for the young men, and then the wine for those, of course, who might be flagging in the desert and weakened, and so it sort of strengthened them, these people in the wilderness or desert. So he's got a purpose with this. Then David asks the question, where's Mephibosheth? You know, Ziba had been placed in charge of Mephibosheth's material things. Now, just to refresh the memory again of our listeners, that Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. David sought him out after Jonathan and Saul died in the battle. And so Ziba was the servant, and he came and gave David the information about Mephibosheth being the son left of Jonathan. And so David then calls Mephibosheth in, and he makes Ziba kind of head of the household to take care of the property, but he gave Mephibosheth Saul's property. Very generous of him to do that, because he was Jonathan's friend. And so now David asks the question, where is he? And Ziba answers, this is what he said. Mephibosheth said, the family of Saul will now be restored to its rightful place in the kingdom. David accepted that. Now then, later on, we're going to find that that wasn't true. Well, maybe wasn't true. We aren't sure, because Mephibosheth just simply says, that he was lame and he couldn't get on his donkey. This is going to come later. Couldn't get on his donkey to ride along with Ziba. And so Ziba just left him. And now Ziba just makes up this story. to sort of condemn Mephibosheth. And David then simply says to Ziba, you get all the property because of what you've done here and because of the courtesy you've shown me. You get to have that property which I had relegated to Mephibosheth, Saul's property. May I always find grace in the sight of the king, Ziba says. All right, now whether or not that's true or feigned, I don't know. But we'll find, maybe to make a judgment, we'll find the words later on that Mephibosheth said, and we'll compare them and make a judgment as to whether or not Ziba is saying this thing and it's true, or Mephibosheth is just trying to justify why he didn't appear when David returns, which maybe Mephibosheth didn't think would happen. I don't know. Anyway, so then we have that going, and not have that sort of thing going on. But maybe we can take a break here, because the next part begins again as David begins the flight, and some people appear. Another man appears, a different kind of man.
Right, very different. Well, that's a good spot, as you say, to take a break, and then we'll pick it up then with more of chapter 16 when we return.
We'll be back in just a moment to the Concordia Bible Institute podcast. In the meantime, I'd like to have you consider this question. What is most important in higher education? How do you prioritize all the knowledge to be gained at an institution of higher learning? Concordia University, Wisconsin, located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Mequon, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, is an institution that is committed to excellence in learning, but at the same time realizes that excellence in itself is insufficient without development in vocation. We believe that God works through our vocations, our callings, in order to serve the needs of those around us. The mission statement of Concordia University puts it this way: Concordia University, Wisconsin is a Lutheran higher education community committed to helping students develop in mind, body, and spirit for service to Christ in the church and the world. You can learn more about the over 70 programs offered at Concordia by visiting the website www.cuw.edu. And if you're benefiting from our Christ in Every Word podcasts, I encourage you to support this ministry by mentioning it to others and by offering your monetary support. Please consider supporting the Concordia Bible Institute by going to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and clicking on the contribute page. And now, back to the podcast.
Alrighty there, folks. We are back with our study of 2 Samuel chapter 16, and we're just coming up here on an interesting part with a friend Shimei comes around. Yeah. How do you pronounce him?
Oh, Shimei is the Shimei, way the King yeah. James does it. I mean, I'm still a King James person.
Sure.
So if the people out there, the older people will understand, and the younger people will be, I think, at least courteous enough to accept that there are other translations.
Even though in heaven, the King
James. Yeah, in King James, of course, it's in heaven. Well, there won't be any, I mean, King James, of course, in heaven. But on earth, yet, there are many, many other translations.
Right.
And they're all a little different.
That's right.
Which makes it very hard to quote, because people have different translations. Anyway, this man, Shimei, appears. He's a descendant of Saul, and he really excoriates David, calls him a bloody man for one thing. He curses at him. He throws stones at him. And it's interesting, I don't know how your translation says this, but it says that the guards of David stood left and right of him. I take that to mean that they surrounded him to prevent the stones from hitting him. Mm. These must have been stones of a good enough size that they would hurt. And, of course, the armed men could use their shields or their armor to fend off the attack by Shimei. But he cursed and threw dust and threw stones and said these awful things about David. And so in verse 9, I think it is. Now, Amos, is it Joab, Abishai,
yeah,
says, let me go across and I'll decapitate this dog, this dead dog.
This dead dog.
And David says, no, you don't think the way I think, you sons of Zeruiah. He kept saying this. What am I to do with you, sons of Zeruiah? Now, that's his sister. These are his sister's sons, Joab, Abishai, and Asahel's the one who died anyway, who really was slain. But would you read the next 10, 11, and 12? It's interesting how David looks at this scene, which is developing here with Shimei.
But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he is cursing because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David,' who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjaminite? Leave him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him to."
Yeah. That's very interesting. Now that he believes, to me at least, oh, maybe it would be good to compare now. Begin at verse 10 in chapter 12. Nathan is speaking to David after David had sinned.
Sure.
With Uriah the Hittite and of course.
"Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your house, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun."
Yeah, now, the point is that he attributes what this Shimei is saying. I think that he's saying this is in fulfillment of what Nathan told me. It wasn't, it was as if David realized, I deserve this. This is in fulfillment of the prophecy, I guess, of Nathan back then, that these are kinds of things that are going to occur. And then he says also that maybe the Lord will see through all this and have mercy on me, which is what he said when the child conceived in that act of adultery with Bathsheba, that he said maybe the Lord would be merciful because the child would die, Nathan said, but David continued to pray even though the child was sick. And then when the child died, that's when what David said, "I thought that maybe the Lord would be merciful." Here also, maybe the Lord will be merciful and maybe he'll permit me to go back and take over and rule again as I had been. So David is still a strong trust in the Lord, but he, I think, believes this is in response to what he had been told by Nathan. Now that's my understanding of his observation here of this Shimei. And we'll come back to him later. He will return. When David returns, we'll see Shimei again at that time. But now we come to Absalom. And Absalom, of course, and Ahithophel are coming into Jerusalem at the end of this chapter. And we have then, he asked, Ahithophel gives him the advice to lie with the wives. It's toward the end of chapter 16. Mm-hmm. He comes in, he gives his advice. Hushai is also there. And Ahithophel gives this advice to sleep with the wives of David, and they laid out a tent on the rooftop, and he did so in the sight of everybody. This is, of course, again, in fulfillment of what Nathan had said would happen, that your neighbor, really, it's going to be your son, who will lie with your wives in open view. You did it secretly. This is going to be done openly. And then there's that last verse, which we referred to before. This is Ahithophel's counsel was like the oracle of God, mm-hmm, to both Absalom and David, and I'm sure others knew him. This was his the way in which he was recognized, and he was recognized highly in Israel, so that his fall is so far, it seemed impossible for him to live, and that's why he took his own life. So then we go into the next chapter, that's at chapter 17, and this is where things really get interesting, because Ahithophel gives his counsel. This is the counsel he gave then, give me 12,000 men. chapter 17, the first part. Give me 12,000 men, and we'll come across David at night. Interestingly, we'll come across David at night, and I really won't do anything. We'll be so it will be so overwhelming to who David is and to what he has with him, to the few he has with him, that I will really be able to find him and slay him and bring the others back with me, so that you will have like a marriage. One of the translations uses that comparison, that the people I will bring all the people back. None of the people will be injured. I'll bring them all back. And it will be like a bridegroom receiving his bride.
I was just going to say, as a bride comes home to her husband, is how the ESV does that.
It says it that way. It doesn't say that way in the King James. Yeah, but it does say that way. That's an interesting way of making a comparison. It's going to be like this is going to be a wonderful thing. Almost as if this is being suggested by the activity of Absalom on that rooftop with the women. This will be sort of a fulfillment of that prayer, if you will. It's not the right kind of word, put it in quotes, but it sort of suggests, you know, how the heathen would suggest to the gods of fertility when they had these kinds of phallic symbols, and that the prostitutes would then, when the sexual activity would begin with the prostitutes, that would a kind of provide an activity for the gods to be generous and to have the lands be fertile and to bring forth very much crop. So this would perhaps be a sort of a shadow of that in the lives of the Israelites and of Absalom himself. Well, that's a very interesting sort of thought, and there are commentators who have suggested that this might be a way of cementing his kingship for himself and maybe others who would understand it to be that way from the activities of the heathen people around them. This is how they behaved and what they thought, and this is their religion. Well, so that's the advice he gave. So by the way, Absalom thought it was very good advice. But then he called Hushai and said, what's your advice? Well, then Hushai says, you know your dad and those with him, Joab and those warriors, they'll be like a bear deprived of her whelps, right, of her cubs.
Right.
You're not going to take him. He's a warrior, and he knows how to conduct himself in times of battle. He'll be alone by himself somewhere. You'll miss him. He'll gather people together, and you'll lose. What I advise you to do is to gather all of Israel together. We'll just inundate them. And in fact, what we will do is, if he retreats into a city, we'll like tie a rope around a city and drag it into the river. Well, what he's doing is appealing to Absalom's ego. He really liked that advice. I mean, this made him to be king already. All it would take is, of course, to be sure that David is out of the picture. Well, anyway, that was really good advice from David's point of view. But then they had to get that message back to David. And so Zadok, the priest, knew it. And Abiathar, the priest, knew it. And then Jonathan and Ahimaaz, those two young lads, returned. They had a little trouble to get back to David because a young boy saw them. A wench, it calls the young lady who saw them and helped them and showed them a place where they then would hide in a well. And the wife of the farmer took grain and put a top on the well and put grain over it to hide the well where these two young men were hiding. And then when Absalom's men came, they couldn't find them. And so they had returned Absalom and say, we couldn't find them. But the young men, and then brought the message back to David. This is what's going on, and you need to get into a private place somewhere, some cave, something, a retreat of some sort, because this is what's going to happen. So David then made plans, good plans, because the plans which he would make in defense of himself when Absalom came. And by the way, he said, Absalom, you should go out to battle by yourself. Go with the warriors when you gather the whole the whole nation together. You go with them. Interestingly, because I don't know that he knew what was going to happen, but I think he might have known that if Joab finds him, we know what will happen. Joab is not going to countenance this behavior by this young Absalom, and David even expressly stating, don't hurt him. You could imagine what this seasoned warrior Joab would think under those terms. Yeah, right. We'll find out about that when I get hold of him. Nice. Anyway, that probably takes us as far as we can go today.
We're just about a minute left or so. If you wanted to wrap up, you're toward the end of 17, I suppose.
Yeah, just about.
We can certainly, if you want to make some concluding thoughts now, that would be okay. We talked about Ahithophel setting his house in order and hanging himself.
Yeah, verse 23 there, yeah.
Verse 23. And then after that, it looks like Absalom crosses the Jordan with all the men of Israel and talks about who he set over the army instead of Joab, Amasa, and so on. So we're pretty close to the end.
Of course, David instructs his telling Joab and really the other warriors, be gentle with the young man,
right.
Absalom.
Right.
Right. That's the point at which I'm sure Joab said, yeah, right. I'll be very gentle.
Yeah, that's right. I'll take care
of him. And he's a seasoned warrior. He's been in how many battles? Who knows how many battles he's led? And he knows what he's doing. And I suppose the army quotes of Absalom, these were not seasoned warriors. They were not those that had followed David. So they knew less about what would go on, what should go on. But I think they thought the whole mass of them would be so overwhelming that they would be able to prevail. Not so.
Well,
it didn't happen, and we'll find out what happened to Absalom next time.
Right. It's a pivotal chapter, isn't it?
Yeah, 18? It is, because we have him trying to wrest the kingdom from David.
From David.
The messianic king, trying to wrest the kingdom, really,
it's a good
from
way to
the
put
Messiah,
it.
If you could put it, yeah. And he is not going to be successful.
Well, I look forward to that. It's a very intriguing chapter. And thanks again, Dr. Seleska, for your thoughts on 16 and 17. Two chapters in one day. That doesn't always happen.
Well, it's kind of the continuity there is very important,
right,
to see how this all transpires. Because,
right.
Because this king, this messianic king, we need to see him prevail, and he does. And interestingly, next week is Holy Week. And we'll see how the army comes to take him, and how Peter reacts.
And how that ties into the events of Holy Week.
The sword.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to that, and thanks again, Dr. Seleska. That's all the time that we have for this session, but please tune in next time and also spread the word to your family and friends so that they can join in too. The mission of the Concordia Bible Institute is to provide Christ-centered Bible instruction from distinguished experts who teach Christ in every word of the Old and New Testaments to strengthen faith and spread belief in the one true God. Again, if you benefit from this podcast series, I encourage you to consider supporting the Bible Institute by going to our website, www.concordiabible.org, and clicking on our contribute page. Until next time, I'm Dr. Brian Gurman, here today with Dr. John Seleska, wishing you God's blessings in Christ Jesus our Lord.